This is again is from this newly republished book, The Flower Garden of Anayat Khan. And we have received some of these from Holland, and they're in the bazaar if you'd like to look at one or purchase one. This is a beautiful little book. It has these precious drawings of Murshid. This is him meeting with a murid in Suren, and they're lovely illustrations. So they're these little secret moments of his life illustrated here by a very famous children's book illustrator of the time, and who was also one of the main figures that helped the message spread in the East. So it says here, philosophy, which is the fourth stage of development, has five aspects: physical, intellectual, mental, moral, and spiritual. These cannot be learned by the mere perusal of books and by listening to the discussions of philosophers. For philosophy is not a study which is taught in the universities alone. It contains quite an opposite path to knowledge, and it can only be studied under the guidance of a murshid. In him or her, the murid has perfect trust and confidence, has complete discipline at the sacrifice of free will is required. We talked about this in the afternoon a few days ago. But it's scary for people to think about that. But then if we're thinking about, I'm giving up my free will, then we're thinking about self, aren't we? In him, the murid has perfect trust and confidence, as complete discipline at the sacrifice of free will is required. At first, this appears to be a loss of individuality. While the ego rebels at being thus crushed and submerged beneath the stronger laws of will and reason. But the battle against the self gives a mastery over self in the end. Which in other words is a mastery over the whole universe. But it is well remembered that such utter trust should never be reposed in a murshid until the self has gained entire confidence in him or her and every doubt has been subdued. When once this confidence is given, there should be nothing on earth which could break or cast it down from the whole gamut of eternity. There are some who consider it most humiliating to be guided by another. But they are greatly mistaken. For in the light of truth, there is but one. The intercourse between murshid and murid is preferable to any other fellowship in the world. When one considers that a friendship in God is the only true friendship which will endure forever. And in truth, it's, if one can think of it in a different way, what an easy thing to do, just to relax into the arms and trust another. That's really ultimately what everyone's looking for in a relationship, but perhaps in that kind of relationship, romantic relationships, it's not the same as this spiritual relationship. Yes, there's a spiritual dimension, but you see, this relationship between teacher and student is beyond all of those things. You see? And I know that in my experience, my teachers over these years have been the one thing, if I may be utterly confused in my own mind about something, and when I say it to them, like that, they can dispel it. So I have people tell me that they are reluctant to talk to their teachers about, oh, I don't want to bother them with my problems. You should bother your teachers with your problems. Your problems are the path. My Tibetan Buddhist teacher, Kompo Rinpoche, had told me one day, I was living at the monastery at that time in Dharamsala, and my door in the monastery was right next to his front door. So people would often, and that would be the post frequently, that the person next to the main door would receive the guests. So a lot of people would come and knock on the door, my door, and I'd see people in terrible condition coming to see him. And sometimes I could hear them yelling and screaming and just being rude, like something had entered their mind. They were unstable. And when they would leave, they'd be perfectly calm and composed. And I'd say to him, and it was endless. You know, some of you have heard me tell you this. I mean, it would start at 7 in the morning, and it would go way past like 9:30 at night. And this is a man of 80 years old. And I'd say to him, Rinpoche, how do you manage this? You know, how do you manage not to be tired or weary or reactive to this? And he said, everything that's put before me, I feel is a great blessing. Every obstacle, every blessing is a blessing. These are the stepping stones to enlightenment. So your problems, or I wouldn't say problems, maybe they're challenges, opportunities for growth. When shared with your spiritual companion, can be a point of contact with the inner life that can unfold the very next step that you need. You understand? So really, I would encourage you to keep these relationships close and precious. Let's rise and face the east. Go around the side of the benches.
For those that know the motions to the prayers, would you stand closer? And we'll say again the prayer salat, which is typically done at noontime, but it's such a beautiful prayer, and as I was saying yesterday, it's like the entire universal worship in a prayer. So let's do it. First, the invocation. The hands in this posture, receptive to the divine light flowing down, and holding it like a cup. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all illuminated souls, who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of our guides. And we take this cup, an evolution of it, allowing this light to flow through and over our being. Most gracious Lord, the Master, Messiah, and Savior of humanity, we greet thee in all humility. Thou art the first cause and the last effect, the divine light and the spirit of guidance, Alpha and Omega. Thy light is on all of us, thy love in all beings, and thy Lord, the incarnate Father, the innocent child, the helpful friend, the inspiring teacher. Allow us to recognize thee in all that I may be sometimes, as Rama, as Vishnu, as Shiva, as Durga. Let us know thee as Abraham, as a son, as Zarathustra, as Moses, as Jesus, as Muhammad, and any other names and forms, known and unknown to the world, we adore thy past, thy presence to be known inside me, and we look for thy blessing to the future, for Christ, loving. The Master of God, that whose heart constantly reaches out, and thou comest on earth to give a message, as has been done for the law, from the dark of day, and speakest the word, as has been to thy mouth, as the light liveth as its name. May the star of the divine light shine in thy heart, be reflected. Message God, reach far and wide, illuminating and making the whole of humanity as one single brotherhood in the world. Namaste, my God. Thank you. Raise our hands and hold this position. If you promise you won't take it as a harsh criticism, but I feel you should know. And this is not just for me, this is for all. The manner of adab, the manner of respect for teachers. When they enter the room, you really should stand. And before they sit, you should remain standing. You should know this. This is in the moral culture teachings of Anaya Khan. If we're on the path, it's our duty and responsibility to know these. It's really only a matter of courtesy, isn't it? Common courtesy doesn't have really much to do with the teachings. But if we can practice this here, this beautiful manner towards each other, that this idea of opening the door for another person, you know, not letting them slam in their faces, you know, of helping them when you see them. I see some of the teachers, I've seen it happen twice with Mariam. I myself have gone to get her water because people keep her talking and then she has to go to the very next class without even a sip of water.
And no one thinks that maybe she has to use the toilet or she has to have a drink of water like everybody else. So she goes right from the morning session into her own teaching. And I'm the only one out of 250 people that can think that a human being needs a glass of water and a break. I don't understand this. Please, have consideration. And not just for the teachers, for each other. When we get up from the dinner table and you're getting something for yourself, offer. Are there anything I can bring you? This service is so good for us. You understand what I'm saying? It humbles us. We get the practice of this humility. Does that make sense? It's such a beautiful, it's this being beautiful in our manner. Some people say, oh, I want to study this, I want to study that. Study how to be a good human being. This is the ultimate teaching. This is very natural. You know, when we are natural, but we are, I'm sorry, there's a part of me coming through right now. It can be very wrathful. So I wanted to say this. And this isn't just about, I tell people, you're not doing that for Mariam or me or anyone else. You're doing it for you. It builds your own good merit. You understand? And when people see you acting in that way, you inspire others to act in that way. And then they will inspire others, and so on and so forth. Then we have peace, we have harmony, we have consideration in the world. So we begin with breathing in and out the nose. In these breaths, which are known as the purification breaths as given by Hazrat Inayat Khan, he gives us the indication that the breath is fuller and fuller and slower, more relaxed than our normal breath, but at the same time not entirely out of our natural rhythm. So you may just sort of observe what your natural rhythm is right now before you begin the breath. And then just extend it and make it a little fuller in each direction. Hazrat Inayat Khan tells us that this very breath, this series of breaths, give us the capability, done with great intention and great concentration lead to the purification and revivification of the soul and its unfoldment. Imagine that. The very thing we're seeking, here we have it. He's giving us a practice. No fancy footwork, no fancy mantra, just the breath. Just the breath. And he tells us to use this phrase, I inhale divine light and life while we're breathing in. And then we radiate. We hold on to nothing. We give it back immediately. I radiate divine life and light. In the first phrase, it's light and life. And in the second phrase, out, it reverses life and light. So we'll begin. And I'll just say the words for a few breaths, and then we'll continue silently. In the nose and out the nose. I inhale divine light and life. And breathing out, I radiate divine life and light. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Now, I'm going to break here because I feel very much that it's important to say something more about this practice. So you can come out of the practice and listen to these words. This is also an example of how one can work with one's guide. Many years ago, my teacher, Murshida Vera, I had said to her, I felt so forlorn. I felt like I didn't belong here. Has anyone had that feeling you don't belong on this earth? And I just was in despair, utter despair. And I said, I know I have to be here. I mean, I'm not suicidal or anything, but this feeling, you know, of just feeling like I don't, this isn't my place, this isn't my time. And she gave me a practice. And this is actually, now I'm giving one of the secrets of this practice. This is kind of the inner esoteric meaning. And he says about this very practice we're doing, this breath practice, this is the basis for other esoteric and deeper mysteries to be opened. So she gave me this practice. And with and it was a wazifa. And with that, or some people say wazifa, she gave me a practice and she said, open your being to feel as if you're connected with the light of the stars and all of the celestial beings, and at once with your feet on the ground, at the same time on this earth. And then you're participating with the whole universe. And if you're participating and involved with the whole universe, then you have to be exactly where you are every moment. And so with this breathing in, imagine that you're breathing in the light and life of all the stars and all the planets and all the universes, and you're bringing it here into kind of a singular focus in your being, and then you're releasing it out again. Rumi talks about that, dancing with the stars. Understand? So bring that consciousness into the practice, not just, but, you know, that you're drawing in all of this light and life. And he also says, an icon says, and also consider love, that you're drawing in all the love. And then you're radiating it back out. So with that kind of awareness of drawing that in and then radiating it and touching all those parts of light and life, you know, participating in this whole cosmic celebration with the breath. So we begin again, breathing in and out the nose. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Continue that for 5 breaths. And now the breath shifts. We breathe in the nose and out the mouth, in the nose and out the mouth, while continuing the breath, the fikr, the putting the phrase on the breath, the fikr. And keeping in mind that as we breathe in the nose and out the mouth, the breath is moving in a rather downward direction. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. In nose, out mouth. Now the breath shifts yet again, and we breathe in, inhale through the mouth, exhale through the nose. Inhale through the mouth, exhale through the nose. Now the line of direction of breath is ascending. And again we repeat the phrase, I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Now the breath shifts again, and we inhale through the mouth, and we exhale through the mouth. There's a sense of really connecting in 360 degrees with the breath and life and light in every direction, not only every direction, every dimension. Breathing in the mouth and out the mouth. While inhaling the phrase, I inhale divine light and life, and the exhaling, I exhale, or radiate, excuse me, I radiate divine life and light. And we complete the practice, although not always assigned, but it can be. We complete the practice with the prayer Nyas on the breath, and I'll say the phrases. So while breathing in, think, Beloved Lord, Almighty God, and breathe out through the rays of the sun, and in through the waves of the air, and out through the all-pervading life and space, and breathe in, purify and revivify me, and hold your breath, and I pray, and breathe out, heal my body, heart, and soul. Allow the healing breath to penetrate all those parts of your being. Concentrate when breathing out. When holding, it's like, you know, kind of amping up, holding that energy, and then you're releasing it and then letting it infuse your body, heart, and soul. This is done 3 times, so we breathe in again. Beloved Lord, Almighty God, and out through the rays of the sun, and breathe in through the waves of the air, and breathe out through the all-pervading life in space, and breathe in, purify and revivify me, hold, and I pray, and breathe out, heal my body, heart, and soul. Breathing in, Beloved Lord, Almighty God, breathe out through the rays of the sun, breathe in through the waves of the air, breathe out through the all-pervading life and space, breathe in, purify and revivify me, hold, and I pray. Heal my body, heart, and soul. You see, the Salat is the universal worship and the prayer. The Nyas is the entire teaching of the symbology activity. Some people call it Zarat. But I'm going to tell you something now. And this recording might stop like it did the other day when I say strong things. Hazrat Anayat Khan's son, Murshid Hidayat, has told me the Zarat was not a creation of Hazrat Anayat Khan. The Zarat was a creation of a student of Hazrat Anayat Khan. And he said, I remember my father was very ill at the time. And the student was very persistent about this teaching. And he said, you know, my father never wanted to hurt anyone's feelings. And he said he was in bed. Hazrat Anayat Khan had diabetes. He said he was in bed and he just agreed to let this person go forward with this these papers. I think those of us that want to know should know that. I'm not saying it's not a beautiful ceremony, but the truth is this prayer is that ceremony. It brings in all of the elements. And he said, can you imagine my father doing all of this? And I mean, really, if you've seen the pictures of Hazrat Anayat Khan, if you've seen any movies with the way he moved, his whole manner was so incredibly dignified. You know, he wouldn't have been doing all of these things like this. He just wouldn't have. It wasn't in his manner. It wasn't in his culture. You understand? So I'm not saying that one shouldn't respect that tradition and the people that are carrying that tradition on, but you also need to know that it's not directly from Hazrat Anayat Khan. We could say it's inspired by Hazrat Anayat Khan. Sometimes we have to shatter the illusion on the rock of truth. And again, I want to emphasize, I mean no disrespect to anyone. I feel that if you are drawn to that tradition and you get something out of it, then it's a very good tradition for you. And anyone that's holding that concentration, I respect them for their devotion. But I wanted you to know this. So today seems, well, today is Tuesday, yes? Is today Tuesday? Okay, this is what I did have planned for Tuesday. There we go. You want to hear it, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
This is the best food ever. this was a talk that was given in December 2nd. This one's a bit earlier than the ones we had been reading. This is from 1924. And this is titled, Spirituality is the Natural Nobleness. Isn't that a beautiful title? Spirituality is the natural nobleness, and the unfolding of the innate nobleness is spirituality. A divine heritage which is hidden in every soul, and by the manifestation of this divine heritage, a soul shows divine origin. Did you get that? Once again. Spirituality is natural nobleness. And the unfolding of the innate nobleness is spirituality. A divine heritage which is hidden in every soul. And the manifestation of this divine heritage is a soul in of this divine heritage, a soul shows divine origin. Now I'm going to just speak a moment because I think it relates to what I was saying earlier. Noble people, how are they in the world? What is their manner? You see what I'm saying? They have a kind of dignity about their being, the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they interact with others. You know, their movements are beautiful. You know what I'm saying? There's a grace, graciousness and a gracefulness to that. And again, I don't know if you've had that experience. I think there's a little clip on the Wahida Deen site of Murshid walking, Hazrat Anayat Khan walking. We should also be careful when we're saying Murshid, Murshid. It's like, we have a lot of Murshids now. Which one are we talking about? I think it's not right to refer to someone just as Murshid or Murshida. Murshid, Kabir, you know, Hazrat Anayat Khan is how I refer to Pir Murshid. Murshid Samuel Lewis, you know, Murshid Kabir Kitz. I mean, it's okay to use their names. I mean, their name isn't Murshid or Murshida. Yeah? But, you know, animals show this. I mean, someone doesn't have to teach a lion how to walk. A lion knows how to do that quite naturally. Someone doesn't have to teach a monkey how to be playful. A monkey does that naturally. You see? We forget, or we've some things happen in our lives that put things a little askew, and it's like the glass is broken and things get fragmented, but we're trying to create a kind of wholeness. You know, it takes time too, and we must be patient with ourselves in this process, but this is what the spiritual practice does. All the striving in the spiritual path is to bring out this nobleness. But one need not strive to bring it out. It comes by itself if one were conscious of that divine heritage. It is that consciousness which brings out that natural nobleness of spirit. In the terms of the Sufis, this nobleness is called Akla Allah. Akla Allah, which means the manner of God. The manner of God. A manner which is unlike any other manner in the whole world. It is the manner of the mother to her child. It is the manner of the father towards his son. It is the manner of man towards his friend. It is the manner of the maiden to her beloved. It is the manner of the Lord towards the servant. It is the manner of the child towards his mother. It is the manner of the son towards his father. It is the manner of the slave towards his king. And yet it is above and beyond all manners known to mankind. It is humility. It is modesty. It is pride. It is honor. It is kindness. It is graciousness. It is indifference. It is independence. A manner inconceivable to human mentality. A manner which cannot be learnt or taught. A manner which springs itself and comes forth as a divine blossom. Natural, you see. Not forced. But the practice does this. If you want to see change, if you want to accomplish something in life, inwardly and outwardly, do the practice. And not mechanically. You can start there, but try to bring in devotion, feeling. Murshid Hazratnat Khan says this, that the greatest sphere is the sphere of feeling. It's much deeper than thinking. But you know, when we touch that, and it happens with these practices, we sometimes become afraid because sometimes those things have been blocked in us and we can be overwhelmed with emotions. And then try to work privately with your practice and let that flow, that sensitivity develop, you know. And of course you're in a safe space here, but you know, sometimes it's hard to be, you know, you don't want everyone to feel you're so vulnerable, and yet when we become completely vulnerable, we're no longer vulnerable. It's very interesting. There's no wall. There's just space then. It takes a lot of energy to build up those fortresses and to hold them in place. Anyone that's a homeowner knows that it's constant maintenance, right, David? I walk the perimeter every week just looking if there's mortar or missing or, you know, the ivy's gotten too tall, whatever. So it's a constant maintenance. And an attentiveness. Okay. It is this manner. It is in this manner that there is the fulfillment of man's life purpose. This manner is the highest religion, the true spirituality, the real aristocracy, and perfect democracy. This manner is the highest religion. It is the true spirituality, the real aristocracy, and the perfect democracy. All disputes and disagreements, all misunderstandings fall away the moment the human spirit has become noble. And there's no more tit for tat, and I have to have the last word, or me first, or all the things that we know we've all participated in, right? We can get a sense of this. We can imagine it, can't we? You know, King Arthur kind of gave us that vision. You know, that's a wonderful story. You know, he had that great equanimity. He created the Round Table. Remind you of anyone else in near history? He valued everyone's opinion at that table. He had a graciousness. He created a Camelot. For it is the sign of the noble spirit that comprehends all things, that assimilates all things, and therefore tolerates all things. It forgives all things. What use is a religion, a philosophy, or mysticism, or whatever you call it, if it does not produce in you that spirit, that inclination which is divine? And if that inclination, that spirit shows in anything, it shows manifesting in divine manner. Neither in the graciousness of a king, nor in the subservience of a slave, you will find that dignity and that humility which divine manner gives. Is not man the seed of God? Is it not then his life's purpose to bring forth divine blossom? It is not by working wonders that man shows his divine origin, nor is it that in possessing extraordinary powers that he shows divine origin. If divine origin is seen in anything, it is in the democracy of the human ego. In the world we would see, there is aristocracy and there is democracy. But in spiritual unfoldment, these two become one, culminating into the real perfection. Here is a beautiful quote, because we hear it sometimes in a different way and we see it in the teachings. The democracy of the ego and the aristocracy of the soul. Democracy of the ego and the aristocracy of the soul. So being flexible, the ego has to give and take, has to be in the world and has to make those accommodations through a democratic attitude, manner. And then the soul has this nobility always there, kind of shining out through that, radiating. A flower proves to be genuine by its radiance. A fruit proves to be genuine by its sweetness. A soul proves to be genuine by its manner. It is not a thing, therefore, to disregard. This is something to take first notice of. All studies and practices silences, and meditations aside, it is the main thing to express God in all one does, especially in the manner that one has towards another. Maybe we could just contemplate that throughout the day. Set that intention to feel that nobleness and to not in an artificial way, but imagining our most noble self and allow that to shine forth. Does that sound like a good plan? Let us stand and hold hands. Fayaz, could you come here, please? Fayaz?
Let us say 11 times in closing, pour upon us thy love and thy light, disclose to us thy divine light, use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light, disclose to us thy divine light, use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that lies in Jesus. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that lies in Jesus. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that lies in Jesus. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Disclose to us thy divine light. Use us for the purpose that lies in Jesus.
I want you to also welcome a brother that's been around for a long time, but has taken that step. This is Ayaz. Ayaz, A-Y-A-Z, meaning the brilliant, the luminous.